big-bellied, bearded truckers stuffing their faces in a booth. Thanks to them, country music plays on the jukebox. I poke my fork at my pancakes. Not real hungry. Somewhat a lie, somewhat the truth. I'm having a serious emotional hangover. There's that interview, Uncle Carlos, Haley, Khalil, Devante, my parents. Mama, Sikani, and I spent the night at Uncle Carlos's house, and I know it was more because Mama's mad at Daddy than it was about the riots. In fact, the news said last night was the first semi-peaceful night in the garden. Just protests, no riots. Cops were still throwing tear gas, though. Anyway, if I bring up my parents' fight, Mama's gonna tell me, stay out of grown folks' business. You'd think since it's partially my fault they fought, it is my business. But nope. I don't know who's supposed to believe that you're not hungry, Mama says. You've always been greedy. I roll my eyes and yawn. She got me up too early and said we were going to IHOP, just the two of us, like we used to do before Sikani came along and ruined everything. He has an extra uniform at Uncle Carlos's and can go to school with Daniel. I only had some sweats and a Drake t-shirt, not DA office appropriate. I gotta go home and change. Thanks for bringing me here, I say. With my awful mood, I owe her that. Anytime, baby. We haven't hung out in a while. Somebody decided I wasn't cool anymore. I thought I was still cool, so whatever. She sips from her steaming mug of coffee. Are you scared to talk to the DA? Not really. Although I do notice the clock is only 3.5 hours away from our 9:30 meeting. Is it that BS of an interview? That bastard? Here we go again. Mama got his damn daddy going on TV telling lies, she says. And who's supposed to believe a grown man was that scared of two children? People on the internet are saying the same thing. Black Twitter's been going in on Officer Cruz's dad, claiming his name should be Tom Cruise with that performance he put on. Tumblr, too. I'm sure there are people who believe him. Haley did. But Miss Ofra was right. It backfired. Folks who never met me or Khalil are calling BS. So while the interview bothers me, it doesn't bother me that much. It's not really the interview, I say. It's other stuff, too. Like? Khalil, I say. Devante told me some stuff about him, and I feel guilty. Stuff like what? She says. Why he sold drugs? He was trying to help Miss Brenda pay a debt to King. Mama's eyes widen. What? Yeah. And he wasn't a King Lord. Khalil turned King down, and King's been lying to save face. Mama shakes her head. Why am I not surprised? King would do some mess like that. I stare at my pancakes. I should have known better. Should have known Khalil better. You had no way of knowing, baby, she says. That's the thing. If I would have been there for him, I couldn't have stopped him. Khalil was almost as stubborn as you. I know you cared about him a lot, even as more than a friend, but you can't blame yourself for this. I look up at her. What you mean cared about him as more than a friend? Don't play dumb, Star. Y'all liked each other for a long time. You think he liked me too? Lord, Mama rolls her eyes. Between the two of us, I'm the old one. You just called yourself old. Older one, she corrects, and shoots me a quick stank eye. And I saw it. How in the world did you miss it? I don't know. He always talked about other girls, not me. It's weird, though. I thought I was over my crush, but sometimes I don't know. Mama traces the rim of her mug. Munch, she says, and is followed by a sigh. Baby, look, you're grieving, okay? That can amplify your emotions and make you feel things you haven't felt in a long time. Even if you do have feelings for Khalil, there's nothing wrong with that. Even though I'm with Chris? Yes. You're 16. You're allowed to have feelings for more than one person. So you're saying I can be a hoe? Girl, she points at me, don't make me kick you under this table. I'm saying, don't beat yourself up about it. Grieve Khalil all you want. Miss him. Allow yourself to miss what could have been. Let your feelings get out of whack. But like I told you, don't stop living. All right? All right. Good. So that's two things, she says. What else is up? What isn't up? My head is tight like my brain is overloaded. I'm guessing emotional hangovers feel a lot like actual hangovers. Haley, I say. She slurps her coffee. Loudly. What that little girl do now? Here she goes with this. Mama, you've never liked her. No, I've never liked how you've followed her, like you can't think for yourself. Difference. I haven't. Don't lie. Remember that drum set you begged me to buy? Why did you want it, Star? Haley wanted to start a band. But I liked the idea, too. Hold up, though. Didn't you tell me you wanted to play guitar in this band? But Haley said you should play drums? Yeah, but... Them little Jonas boys, she says. Which one did you really like? Joe. But who said you should be with the curly-headed one instead? Haley. But Nick was still fine as all get out, and this is middle school stuff. Uh-huh. Last year, you begged me to let you color your hair purple. Why, Star? I want it. No. Why, Star? She says. The real why. Damn. There's a pattern here. Because Haley wanted me, her, and Maya to have matching hair. Exactamly. Baby, I love you, but you have a history of putting your wants aside and doing whatever that little girl wants. Excuse me if I don't like her. With all my receipts put out there like that, I say, I can see why. Good. Realizing is the first step. So what she do now? We had an argument yesterday, I say. Really, though, things have been weird for a while. She stopped texting me and unfollowed my Tumblr. Mama reaches her fork onto my plate and breaks off a piece of pancake. What is Tumblr, anyway? Is it like Facebook? No. And you're forbidden to get one. No parents allowed. You guys already took over Facebook. You haven't responded to my friend request yet. I know. I need Candy Crush lives. That's why I'll never respond. She gives me the look. I don't care. There are some things I absolutely refuse to do. So, she unfollowed your Tumblr thingy, Mama says, proving why she can never have one. Is that all? No, she said and did some stupid stuff, too. I rubbed my eyes. Like I said, it's too early. I'm starting to wonder why we're friends. Well, Munch, she gets another freaking piece of my pancakes. You have to decide if the relationship is worth salvaging. Make a list of the good stuff, then make a list of the bad stuff. If one outweighs the other, then you know what you gotta do. Trust me, that method hasn't failed me yet. Is that what you did with Daddy after Aisha got pregnant? I ask. 'Cause I'll be honest, I would have kicked him to the curb. No offense. It's all right. A lot of people called me a fool for going back to your daddy. Shoot, they may still call me a fool behind my back. Your Nana would have a stroke if she knew this, but she's the real reason I stayed with your daddy. I thought Nana hated Daddy. I think Nana still hates Daddy. Sadness creeps into Mama's eyes, but she gives me a small smile. When I was growing up, your grandmother would do and say hurtful things when she was drunk, and apologize the next morning. At an early age, I learned that people make mistakes, and you have to decide if their mistakes are bigger than your love for them. She takes a deep breath. Seven's not a mistake. I love him to death. But Maverick made a mistake in his actions. However, all of his good and the love we share outweighs that one mistake. Even with crazy Aisha in our lives? I ask. Mama chuckles. Even with crazy, messy, annoying Aisha. It's a little different, yeah. But if the good outweighs the bad, keep Haley in your life, baby. That might be the problem. A lot of the good stuff is from the past. The Jonas Brothers, High School Musical, our shared grief. Our friendship is based on memories. What do we have now? What if the good doesn't outweigh the bad? I ask. Then let her go, Mama says. And if you keep her in your life and she keeps doing the bad, let her go. Because I promise you, had your daddy pulled some mess like that again, I'd be married to Idris Elba and saying, Maverick who? I bust out laughing. Now eat, she says, and hands me her fork, before I have no choice but to eat these pancakes for you. I'm so used to seeing smoke in Garden Heights, it's weird when we go back and there isn't any. It's dreary because of a late-night storm, but we can ride with the windows down. Even though the riot stopped, we pass as many tanks as we pass lowriders. But at home, smoke greets us at the front door. Maverick! Mama hollers, and we hurry toward the kitchen. Daddy pours water on a skillet at the sink. And the skillet responds with a loud sizzle and a white cloud. Whatever he burned it bad.
Hallelujah!
Seven throws his hands up at the table.
Somebody who can actually cook. Shut up, Daddy says.
Mama takes the skillet and examines the unidentifiable remains. What was this? Eggs?
Glad to see you know how to come home, he says.
He walks right by me without a glance or a good morning. He's still pissed about Chris? Mama gets a fork and stabs at the charred food stuck to the skillet. You want some breakfast, Seven, baby? He watches her and goes,
Nah. By the way, the skillet didn't do anything, Ma.
You're right, she says, but she keeps stabbing. Seriously, I can fix you something. Eggs, bacon. She looks toward the hall and shouts, The pork kind, pig, swine, all of that. So much for the good outweighing the bad. Seven and I look at each other. We hate when they fight because we always get stuck in the middle of their wars. Our appetites are the greatest casualty. If Mama's mad and not cooking, we have to eat Daddy's struggle meals, like spaghetti with ketchup and hot dogs in it.
I'll grab something at school.
Seven kisses her cheek.
Thanks, though.
He gives me a fist bump on his way out, the Seven way of wishing me good luck. Daddy returns wearing a backwards cap. He grabs his keys and a banana. We have to be at the DA's office at 9:30, Mama says. Are you coming?
Oh. Carlos can't do it, since he the one y'all let in on secrets and stuff.
You know what, Maverick?
I'll be there,
he says, and leaves. Mama stabs the skillet some more. The DA personally escorts us to a conference room. Her name is Karen Monroe, and she's a middle-aged white lady who claims she understands what I'm going through. Ms. Ofra is already in the conference room along with some people who work at the DA's office. Ms. Monroe gives a long speech about how much she wants justice for Khalil and apologizes that it's taken this long for us to meet.
12 days, to be exact,
Daddy points out.
Too long, if you ask me.
Ms. Monroe looks a bit uncomfortable at that. She explains the grand jury proceedings. Then she asks about that night. I pretty much tell her what I told the cops, except she doesn't ask any stupid questions about Khalil. But when I get to the part when I describe the number of shots, how they hit Khalil in his back, the look on his face, my stomach bubbles, bile pools in my mouth, and I gag. Mama jumps up and grabs a garbage bin. She puts it in front of me quick enough to catch the vomit that spews from my mouth. And I cry and puke. Cry and puke. It's all I can do. The DA gets me a soda and says, "That'll be all today, sweetie. Thank you." Daddy helps me to Mama's car, and people in the halls gawk. I bet they know I'm the witness from my teary, snotty face, and are probably giving me a new name. Poor thing. As in, oh, that poor thing. That makes it worse. I get in the car away from their pity and rest my head against the window, feeling like shit. Mama parks in front of the store and Daddy pulls up behind us. He gets out his truck and comes to Mama's side of the car. She rolls her window down. I'm going to the school, she tells him. They need to know what's going on. Can she stay with you?
Yeah, that's fine. She can rest in the office.
Another thing puking and crying gets you. People talk about you like you're not there and make plans for you. Poor thing apparently can't hear. You sure? Mama asks him. Or do I need to take her to Carlos? Daddy sighs.
Lisa.
Maverick, I don't give a flying monkey's ass what your problem is. Just be there for your daughter. Please? Daddy moves to my side of the car and opens the door.
Come here, baby.
I climb out, blubbering like a little kid who skinned her knee. Daddy pulls me into his chest, rubbing my back and kissing my hair. Mama drives off.
I'm sorry, baby,
he says. The crying, the puking don't mean anything anymore. My daddy's got me. We go in the store. Daddy turns on the lights but keeps the closed sign in the window. He goes to his office for a second, then comes back to me and holds my chin.
Open your mouth,
he says. I open it, and his face scrunches up.
Ew! We gotta get you a whole bottle of mouthwash. About to raise the dead with that breath.
I laugh with tears in my eyes. Like I said, Daddy's talented that way. He wipes my face with his hands, which are rough as sandpaper, but I'm used to them. He frames my face. I smile.
There go my baby, he says. You'll be all right.
I feel normal enough to say, now I'm your baby? You haven't been acting like it.
Don't start.
He goes down the medicine aisle.
Sounding like your mama.
I'm just saying. You've been extra salty today. He returns with a bottle of Listerine.
Here, before you kill my produce with your breath.
Like you killed those eggs this morning?
Hey, those were blackened eggs. Y'all don't know about that.
Nobody knows about that. A couple of rinses in the restroom transform my mouth from a swamp of puke residue to normal. Daddy waits on the wooden bench at the front of the store. Our older customers who can't walk much usually sit there as Daddy, Seven, or I get their groceries for them. Daddy pats the spot next to him. I sit. You're gonna open back up soon?
In a little bit, What you see in that white boy?
Damn. I wasn't expecting him to go right into it. Besides the fact that he's adorable, I say, and Daddy makes a gagging sound. He's smart, funny, and he cares about me. A lot.
You got a problem with black boys?
No. I've had black boyfriends. 3 of them. 1 in 4th grade, although that doesn't really count, and 2 in middle school, which don't count either, 'cause nobody knows shit about a relationship in middle school, or about anything, really.
What?
He says.
I ain't know about them.
Because I knew you'd act crazy, put a hit on them or something.
You know, that ain't a bad idea.
Daddy! I smack his arm as he cracks up.
Did Carlos know about them?
He asks. No. He would have ran background checks on them or arrested them. Not cool.
So why you tell him about the white boy?
I didn't tell him, I say. He found out. Chris lives down the street from him, so it was harder to hide. And let's be real here, Daddy. I've heard the stuff you've said about interracial couples. I didn't want you talking about me and Chris like that.
Chris, he mocks. What kind of plain-ass name is that?
He's so petty. Since you want to ask me questions, do you have a problem with white people?
Not really.
Not really?
Hey, I'm being honest. My thing is girls usually date boys who are like their daddies. And I ain't gonna lie, when I saw that white... Chris, he corrects, and I smile. I got worried. Thought I turned you against black men or didn't set a good example of a black man. I couldn't handle that.
I rest my head on his shoulder. Nah, Daddy. You haven't set a good example of what a black man should be. You've set a good example of what a man should be. Duh.
Duh,
he mocks and kisses the top of my head.
My baby.
A gray BMW comes to a sudden stop in front of the store. Daddy nudges me off the bench.
Come on.
He pulls me to his office and shoves me in. I catch a glimpse of King getting out the BMW before Daddy closes the door in my face. Hand shaking, I crack open the door. Daddy stands guard in the entrance of the store. His hand drifts to his waist, his peace. 3 other King Lords hop out the BMW, but Daddy calls out,
Nah, if you want to talk, we do this alone.
King nods at his boys. They wait beside the car. Daddy steps aside and King lumbers in. I'm ashamed to admit it, but I don't know if Daddy stands a chance against King. Daddy isn't skinny or short, but compared to King, who's pure muscle at 6 feet, he looks tiny. It's damn near blasphemous to think like that, though.
Where he at?
King asks.
Where who at? You know who. Vontae. How am I supposed to know?
Daddy says.
He was working here, wasn't he?
For a day or two, yeah. I ain't seen him today.
King paces and points his cigar at Daddy. Sweat glistens on the rolls of fat on the back of his head.
You lying. Why I gotta lie, King? All the shit I did for you, King says. And this how you repay me? Where he at, Big Mav? I don't know. Where he at?
King yells.
I said I don't know. He asked me for a couple $100 the other day. I told him he had to work for it, so he did. I had some mercy and paid it all up front like a dumbass. He was supposed to come in today and didn't. End of story. Why he need money from you when he stole 5 G's from me? Hell if I know,
Daddy says.
If I find out you lying, you ain't got to worry about that. Got too many problems of my own. Oh, yeah, I know about your problems,
King says, a laugh bubbling from him.
I heard Star Star, the witness they been talking about on the news. Hope she know to keep her mouth shut when she's supposed to. What the hell is that supposed to mean? These cases are always interesting, King says. They dig for information, shit. They try to find out more about the person who died than the person who shot them. Make it seem like a good thing they got killed. They already saying Khalil sold drugs. That can mean problems for anybody who may have been involved in his hustle. So people gotta be careful when they talking to the DA. Wouldn't want them to be in danger cause they ran their mouth. Nah, Daddy says. The folks who were involved in the hustle need to be careful about what they say or even think about doing.
There are several agonizing seconds of Daddy and King staring each other down. Daddy's hand is at his waist like it's glued there. King leaves, pushing the door hard enough to nearly break the hinges, the bell clanging wildly. He gets in his BMW. His minions follow, and he peels out, leaving the truth behind. He's gonna mess me up if I rat on him. Daddy sinks onto the old people's bench. His shoulders slump, and he takes a deep breath. We close early and pick up dinner from Reuben's. During the short drive home, I notice every car behind us, especially if it's gray.
I won't let him do anything to you, Daddy says.
I know, but still. Mama's beating the hell out of some steaks when we get home. First the skillet, and now red meat. Nothing in the kitchen is safe. Daddy holds up the bags for her to see.
I got dinner, baby.
It doesn't stop her from beating the steaks. We all sit around the kitchen table, but it's the quietest dinner in Carter family history. My parents aren't talking. Seven's not talking. I'm definitely not talking. Or eating. Between the disaster at the DA's office and King, my ribs and baked beans look disgusting. Sikani can't sit still, like he's itching to give every detail of his day. I guess he can tell nobody's in the mood. Bricks chomps and slobbers over some ribs in his corner. Afterward, Mama collects our plates and silverware. All right, guys, finish your homework. And don't worry, Star, your teachers gave me yours. Why would I worry about that? Thanks. She starts to pick up Daddy's plate, but he touches her arm.
Nah, I got it.
He takes all of the plates from her, dumps them in the sink, and turns the water on. Maverick, you don't have to do that. He squirts way too much dishwashing liquid in the sink. He always does.
It's cool. What time you gotta be at the clinic in the morning?
I'll be off again tomorrow. I have a job interview. Daddy turns around.
Another one?
Another one? Yeah. Markham Memorial again. That's where Aunt Pam works, I say. Yeah, her dad is on the board and recommended me. It's the pediatrics nursing manager. This is my second interview for it, actually. They want some of the higher-ups to interview me this time.
Baby, that's amazing,
Daddy says.
That means you're close to getting it, huh?
Hopefully, she says. Pam thinks it's as good as mine.
Why didn't you guys tell us?
Seven asks.
'Cause it's none of y'all business,
Daddy says. And we didn't want to get your hopes up, Mama adds. It's a competitive position.
How much does it pay?
Seven's rude self asks. More than what I make at the clinic. Six figures.
Six!
Seven and I say.
Mama's gonna be a millionaire!
Sikani shouts. I swear he doesn't know anything. Six figures is the 100,000, Sikani, I say. Oh.
It's still a lot. What time is your interview?
Daddy asks. 11.
Okay, good.
He turns around and wipes a plate.
We can look at some houses before you go to it.
Mama's hand goes across her chest and she steps back. What? He looks at me, then at her.
I'm getting us out of Garden Heights, baby. You got my word.
The idea is as crazy as a four-point shot. Living somewhere other than Garden Heights? Yeah, right. I'd never believe it if it wasn't Daddy saying it. Daddy never says something unless he means it. King's threat must have really got to him. He scrubs the skillet that Mama stabbed this morning. She takes it from him, sets it down, and grabs his hand. Don't worry about that.
I told you it's cool. I can get the dishes.
Forget the dishes. And she pulls him to their bedroom and closes the door. Suddenly, their TV blares real loud, and Jodeci sings over it from the stereo. If that woman ends up with a fetus in her uterus, I will be completely done. Done.
Ew, man, Seven says, knowing the deal, too. They're too old for that.
Too old for what? Sakani asks.
Nothing, Seven and I say together. You think Daddy meant that, though? I ask Seven. We're moving? He twists one of his dreads at the root. I don't think he realizes he's doing it.
Sounds like y'all are, especially if Ma gets this job.
Y'all, I say. You're not staying in Garden Heights.
I mean, I'll visit, but I can't leave my mama and my sister, Star. You know that.
Your mama put you out, Sakani says. Where else you gonna go, stupid?
Who you calling stupid?
Seven sticks his hand under his armpit, then rubs it in Sakani's face. The one time he did it to me, I was 9. He got a busted lip, and I got a whooping. You're not going to be at your mama's house anyway, I say. You're going away to college, hallelujah, thank Black Jesus. Seven raises his brows.
You want an armpit hand too? And I'm going to Central Community so I can stay at my mama's house and watch out for my sisters.
That stings a little. I'm his sister, too. Not just them. House, I repeat. You never call it home.
Yeah, I do, he says.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
Shut the hell up, I end that argument. Ooh, Sakani holds his hand out. Give me my dollar. Hell no, I say. That shit doesn't work with me.
$3!
Okay, fine. I'll give you a $3 bill. I've never seen a $3 bill, he says. Exactly. And you'll never see my $3. Part 2. 5 weeks after it. 16. Ms. Ofra arranged for me to do an interview with one of the national news programs today. Exactly a week before I testify before the grand jury next Monday. It's around 6 o'clock when the limo that the news program sent arrives. My family's coming with me. I doubt my brothers will be interviewed, but Seven wants to support me. Sakani claims he does too, but really he's hoping he'll get discovered somehow with all those cameras around. My parents told him about everything. As much as he gets on my nerves, it was sweet when he gave me a handmade card that said, sorry. Until I opened it, there was a drawing of me crying over Khalil. And I had devil horns. Sakani said he wanted it to be real. Little asshole. We all head out to the limo. Some neighbors watch curiously from their porches and yards. Mama made all of us, including Daddy, dress up like we're going to Christ Temple. Not quite Easter formal, but not diverse church casual. She says we're not going to have the news people thinking we're hood rats. So as we're walking to the car, she's all, when we get there, don't touch anything and only speak when somebody speaks to you. It's yes, ma'am, and yes, sir, or no, ma'am, and no, sir. Do I make myself clear? Yes, ma'am, the three of us say. All right now, Star, one of our neighbors calls out. I get that just about every day in the neighborhood now. Word spreading around the garden that I'm the witness. All right now is more than a greeting. It's a simple way people let me know they got my back. The best part, though, It's never all right now, Big Mav's daughter who works in the store. It's always Star. We leave in the limo. I drum my fingers on my knee as I watch the neighborhood pass by. I've talked to detectives and the DA, and next week I'll talk to the grand jury. I've talked about that night so much I can repeat it back in my sleep. But the whole world will see this. My phone vibrates in my blazer pocket. A couple of texts from Chris.
My mom wants to know what color your prom dress is. Something about the tailor needs to know ASAP.
Oh, shit. The junior-senior prom is Saturday. I haven't bought a dress. With all this Khalil stuff, I'm not sure I want to go. Mama said I need to get my mind off things. I said no. She gave me the look. So I'm going to the damn prom. This dictatorship she's on? Not cool. I text Chris back. Light blue? He responds.
You don't have a dress yet?
I've got plenty of time, I write back. Just been busy. It's true. Ms. Ofra prepared me for this interview every day after school. Some days we finished early and I helped out around Just Us for Justice. Answered phones, passed out flyers, anything they needed me to do. Sometimes I listened in on their staff meetings as they discussed police reform ideas and the importance of telling the community to protest, not riot. I asked Dr. Davis if Just Us could have a roundtable discussion at Williamson, like they do at Garden High. He said he didn't see the need. Chris replies to my prom text.
Okay, if you say so. BTW, Vontae says sup. About to kill him on Madden. He needs to stop calling me Bieber, though.
After all that white boy trying to be black shit, Devontae said about Chris, lately he's at Chris's house more than I am. Chris invited him over to play Madden, and all of a sudden they're bros. According to Devontae, Chris's massive video game collection makes up for his whiteness. I told Devontae he's a video game thot. He told me to shut up. We're cool like that, though. We arrive at a fancy hotel downtown. A white guy in a hoodie waits under the awning leading up to the door. He has a clipboard under his arm and a Starbucks cup in his hand. Still, he somehow manages to open the limo door and shake our hands when we get out.
John, the producer, it's a pleasure to meet you.
He shakes my hand a second time.
And let me guess, you're a Star.
Yes, sir.
Thank you so much for having the bravery to do this.
There's that word again, bravery. Brave people's legs don't shake. Brave people don't feel like puking. Brave people sure don't have to remind themselves how to breathe if they think about that night too hard. If bravery is a medical condition, everybody's misdiagnosed me. John leads us through all of these twists and turns, and I'm so glad I'm wearing flats. He can't stop talking about how important the interview is and how much they want to get the truth out there. He's not exactly adding to my bravery. He takes us to the hotel courtyard, where some camera operators and other show people are setting up. In the middle of the chaos, the interviewer, Diane Carey, is getting her makeup done. It's weird seeing her in the flesh and not as a bunch of pixels on TV. When I was younger, every single time I spent the night at Nana's house, she made me sleep in one of her long-ass nightgowns, say my bedtime prayers for at least 5 minutes, and watch Diane Carey's news report so I could be knowledgeable of the world. Hi! Mrs. Carey's face lights up when she sees us. She comes over, and I gotta give the makeup lady props 'cause she follows her and keeps working like a pro. Mrs. Carey shakes our hands. Diane, so nice to meet you all, and you must be Star, she says to me. Don't be nervous. This will simply be a conversation between the two of us. The whole time she talks, some guy snaps photos of us. Yeah, this will be a normal conversation.
Star, we're thinking we could get shots of you and Diane walking and talking around the courtyard, John says. Then we'll go up to the suite and do the conversations between you and Diane. You,
Diane and Miss Ofra, and finally you and your parents. After that, we'll be all set.
One of the production people mics me up as John gives me a rundown of this walk-and-talk thing.
It's only a transitional shot, he says. Simple stuff.
Simple my ass. The first time, I practically power walk. The second time, I walk like I'm in a funeral processional and can't answer Mrs. Carey's questions. I never realized walking and talking required so much coordination. Once we get that right, we take an elevator to the top floor. John leads us to a huge suite. Seriously, it looks like a penthouse overlooking downtown. About a dozen people are setting up cameras and lighting. Ms. Ofra's there in one of her Khalil shirts and a skirt. John says they're ready for me. I sit in the love seat across from Mrs. Carey. I've never been able to cross my legs, for whatever reason. So that's out the question. They check my mic, and Mrs. Carey tells me to relax. Soon, the cameras are rolling.
Millions of people around the world have heard the name Khalil Harris, she says, and they've developed their own ideas of who he was. Who was he to you?
More than he may have ever realized. One of my best friends, I say. We knew each other since we were babies. If he were here, he'd point out that he was 5 months, 2 weeks, and 3 days older than me. We both chuckle at that. But that's who Khalil is. Was. Damn. It hurts to correct myself. He was a jokester. Even when things were hard, he'd somehow find some light in it. And he... My voice cracks. I know it's corny, but I think he's here. His nosy ass would show up to make sure I say the right things, probably calling me his number one fan or some annoying title that only Khalil can think of. I miss that boy. He had a big heart, I say. I know that some people call him a thug, but if you knew him, you'd know that wasn't the case at all. I'm not saying he was an angel or anything, but he wasn't a bad person. He was a... I shrug. He was a kid. She nods.
He was a kid.
He was a kid.
What do you think about people who focus on the not-so-good aspect of him? She asks. The fact that he may have sold drugs.
Ms. Ofra once said that this is how I fight, with my voice. So I fight. I hate it, I say. If people knew why he sold drugs, they wouldn't talk about him that way.
Mrs. Carey sits up a little. Why did he sell them?
I glance at Ms. Ofra, and she shakes her head. During all our prep meetings, she advised me not to go into details about Khalil selling drugs. She said the public doesn't have to know about that. But then I look at the camera, suddenly aware that millions of people will watch this in a few days. King may be one of them. Although his threat is loud in my head, it's not nearly as loud as what Kenya said that day in the store. Khalil would defend me. I should defend him. So I gear up to throw a punch. Khalil's mom is a drug addict, I tell Mrs. Carey. Anybody who knew him knew how much that bothered him and how much he hated drugs. He only sold them to help her out of a situation with the biggest drug dealer and gang leader in the neighborhood. Miss Ofra noticeably sighs. My parents have wide eyes. It's dry snitching, but it's snitching. Anybody who knows anything about Garden Heights will know exactly who I'm talking about. Hell, if they watch Mr. Lewis's interview, they can figure it out. But hey, since King wants to go around the neighborhood lying and saying Khalil repped his set, I can let the world know Khalil was forced to sell drugs for him. His mom's life was in danger, I say. That's the only reason he'd ever do something like that. And he wasn't a gang member.
He wasn't?
No, ma'am. He never wanted to fall into that type of life. But I guess... I think about Devante for some reason. I don't understand how everyone can make it seem like it's okay he got killed if he was a drug dealer and a gangbanger. A hook, straight to the jaw.
The media? She asks.
Yes, ma'am. It seems like they always talk about what he may have said, what he may have done, what he may not have done. I didn't know a dead person could be charged in his own murder, you know?
The moment I say it, I know it's my jab to the mouth. Mrs. Carey asks for my account of that night. I can't go into a lot of details. Ms. Ofer told me not to. But I tell her we did everything 115 asked, and never once cussed at him like his father claims. I tell her how afraid I was, how Khalil was so concerned about me that he opened the door and asked if I was okay.
So, he didn't make a threat on Officer Cruz's life? She questions.
No, ma'am. His exact words were, "Star, are you okay?" That was the last thing he said.
And I'm ugly crying, describing the moment when the shots rang out and Khalil looked at me for the last time. How I held him in the street and saw his eyes gloss over. I tell her 115 pointed his gun at me.
He pointed his gun at you? She asks.
Yes, ma'am. He kept it on me until the other officers arrived.
Behind the cameras, Mama puts her hand over her mouth. Fury sparks in Daddy's eyes. Ms. Ofra looks stunned. It's another jab.
See, I only told Uncle Carlos that part.
Mrs. Carey gives me Kleenex and a moment to get myself together.
Has this situation made you fearful of cops? She eventually asks.
I don't know, I say truthfully. My uncle's a cop. I know not all cops are bad. And they risk their lives, you know. I'm always scared for my uncle. But I'm tired of them assuming, especially when it comes to black people.
You wish that more cops wouldn't make assumptions about black people, she clarifies.
Right. This all happened because he...
I can't say his name.
Assumed that we were up to no good. Because we're black, and because of where we live. We were just two kids minding our business, you know? His assumption killed Khalil. It could have killed me.
A kick straight to the ribs.
If Officer Cruz were sitting here, Mrs. Carey says, what would you say to him?
I blink several times. My mouth waters, but I swallow. No way I'm going to let myself cry or throw up from thinking about that man. If he were sitting here, I don't have enough black Jesus in me to tell him I forgive him. Instead, I'd probably punch him straight up. But Ms. Ofer says this interview is the way I fight. When you fight, you put yourself out there, not caring who you hurt or if you'll get hurt. So I throw one more blow right at 115.
I'd ask him if he wished he shot me, too.
17. My interview aired yesterday on Diane Carey's Friday Night News special. This morning, John, the producer, called and said it's one of the most watched interviews in the network's history. A millionaire, who wishes to remain anonymous, offered to pay my college tuition. John said the offer was made right after the interview aired. I think it's Oprah, but that's just me because I've always imagined she's my fairy godmother, and one day she'll come to my house saying, "You get a car!" The network's already got a bunch of emails in support of me. I haven't seen any of them, but I received the best message in a text from Kenya. "About time you spoke out. Don't let this fame go to your head, though." The interview trended online. When I looked this morning, people were still talking about it. Black Twitter and Tumblr have my back. Some assholes want me dead. King's not too happy, either. Kenya told me he's heated that I dry-snitched. The Saturday news programs discussed the interview, too, dissecting my words like I'm the president or something.
This one network is outraged by my disregard for cops. I'm not sure how they got that out the interview. It's not like I was on some NWA fuck the police type shit. I simply said I'd ask the man if he wished he shot me too. I don't care. I'm not apologizing for how I feel. People can say what they want. But it's Saturday, and I'm sitting in a Rolls Royce on my way to prom with a boyfriend who isn't saying much of anything to me. Chris is more interested in his phone. "You look nice," I tell him, which he does. His black tux with a light blue vest and tie match the strapless tea-length gown I have on. His black leather Chuck Taylors are also a good match to my silver sequined ones. The dictator, a.k.a. my mom, bought my outfit. She has pretty good taste. Chris says, "Thanks, you too." But it's so robotic, like he's saying what he's supposed to and not what he wants to. And how does he know what I look like? He's barely looked at me since he picked me up from Uncle Carlos's house. I have no clue what's wrong with him. Things have been fine between us as far as I know. Now, out of nowhere, he's all moody and silent. I would ask the driver to take me back to Uncle Carlos's, but I look too cute to go home. The driveway at the country club is lit with blue lights, and golden balloon arches hang over it. We're in the only Rolls Royce among a sea of limos, so of course people look when we pull up to the entrance. The driver opens the door for us. Mr. Silent climbs out first and actually helps me out. Our classmates whoop and cheer and whistle. Chris wraps his arm around my waist and we smile for pictures like everything's all good. Chris takes my hand and wordlessly escorts me inside. Loud music greets us. Chandeliers and flashing party lights light up the ballroom. Some committee decided the theme should be Midnight in Paris, so there's a huge Eiffel Tower made out of Christmas lights. Looks like just about every junior and senior at Williamson is on the dance floor. Let me say it. A Garden Heights party and a Williamson party are two very different things. At Big D's party, people nay-nayed, hit the quan, twerked and stuff. At prom, I honestly don't know what the hell some of them are doing. Lots of jumping and fist pumping and attempts at twerking. It's not bad, just different. Way different. It's weird, though. I'm not as hesitant to dance here as I was at Big D's party. Like I said, at Williamson, I'm cool by default because I'm black. I can go out there and do a silly dance move I made up, and everyone will think it's the new thing. White people assume all black people are experts on trends and shit. There's no way in hell I'd try that at a Garden Heights party, though. You make a fool of yourself one time, and that's it. Everybody in the neighborhood will know, and nobody will forget. In Garden Heights, I learn how to be dope by watching. At Williamson, I put my learned dopeness on display. I'm not even that dope, but these white kids think I am, and that goes a long way in high school politics. I start to ask Chris if he wants to dance, but he lets my hand go and heads towards some of his boys. Why did I come to prom again? "Star!" somebody calls. I look around a couple of times and finally spot Maya waving at me from a table. "Girl Lee," she says when I get there, "you look good. I know Chris went crazy when he saw you." "No, he nearly drove me crazy." "Thanks," I say, and give her a once-over. She's wearing a pink knee-length strapless dress. A pair of sparkly silver stilettos gives her about 5 more inches of height. I applaud her for making it this far in them. I hate heels. But if anybody's looking good tonight, it's you. You clean up nice, shorty. Don't call me that, especially since she who must not be named gave me that nickname. Damn, she Voldemorted Haley. Maya, you don't have to take sides, you know. She's the one not speaking to us, remember?
Haley's been on some silent treatment shit since the incident at Maya's house. I mean, damn. I call you out on something, so I'm wrong and deserve the cold shoulder? Nah, she's not guilt-tripping me like that. And when Maya admitted to Haley that she told me why Haley unfollowed my Tumblr, Haley stopped speaking to Maya, claiming she won't talk to either of us until we apologize. She's not used to both of us turning on her like this. Whatever. She and Chris can form a club for all I care. Call it the Silent Treatment League of Young Rich Brats. I'm in my feelings just a tad. I hate that Maya got pulled into it, though. Maya, I'm sorry. No need, she says. Don't know if I told you, but I brought up the cat thing to her, after I told her about Tumblr. Really? Yeah, and she told me to get over it. Maya shakes her head. I'm still mad at myself for letting her say it in the first place. Yeah, I'm mad at myself, too. We get quiet. Maya nudges my side. Hey, we minorities have to stick together, remember? I chuckle. Okay, okay. Where's Ryan? Getting some snacks. He looks good tonight, if I say so myself. Where's your guy? Don't know, I say, and don't care at the moment. The beautiful thing about best friends, they can tell when you don't want to talk, and they don't push it. Maya hooks her arm through mine. Come on, I did not get dressed up to stand around. We head for the dance floor and jump and fist pump along with the rest of them. Maya takes those heels off and barefoots it. Jess, Britt, and some of the other girls from the team join us, and we make our own little dancing circle. We lose our minds when my cousin through marriage, Beyonce, comes on. I swear I'm related to Jay-Z somehow. Same last name. We have to be. We sing loudly with Cousin Bae until we almost go hoarse, and Maya and I are really into it. I may not have Khalil, Natasha, or even Haley, but I have Maya. She's enough. After 6 songs, we head back to our table, our arms draped around each other. I carry one of Maya's shoes, and the other one dangles from her wrist by the strap. Did you see Mr. Warren do the robot? Maya asks, between laughs. Did I? I didn't know he had it in him. Maya stops. She looks around without looking at anything at all. Don't look, but look to the left, she mutters. The hell? Which one is it? Look to the left, she says through her teeth, but quickly. Haley and Luke are arm in arm in the entrance, posing for pictures, and I can't even throw shade. With her gold and white dress and his white tux, they're cute. I mean, just because we've got beef doesn't mean I can't compliment her, you know? I'm even happy she's with Luke. It took long enough. Haley and Luke walk in our direction, but brush right past us. Her shoulder a couple of inches away from mine. She flashes a stank eye. This chick. I probably shoot one back. Sometimes I give stank eyes and don't realize I'm giving them. Yeah, that's right, Maya says to Haley's back. You better keep walking. Lord, Maya can go from 0 to 100 a little too quick. Let's get something to drink, I say, pulling her with me, before you hurt yourself. We get some punch and join Ryan at our table. He's stuffing his face with finger sandwiches and meatballs, crumbs falling onto his tux. Where y'all been? He asks. Dancing, Maya says. She steals one of his shrimp. You didn't eat all day, did you?
Nope. I was about to starve to death.
He nods at me.
What's up, black girlfriend?
We joke around about the whole only two black kids in the class are supposed to date thing. What's up, black boyfriend? I say, and steal a shrimp, too. What do you know? Chris remembers he came with somebody and walks over to our table. He says hey to Maya and Ryan, then asks me,
You want to take pictures or something?
His tone is all robotic again. On a scale of 1 to 10 on the I'm done meter, I'm at about 50. No thanks, I tell him. I'm not taking pictures with somebody who doesn't want to be here with me. He sighs. Why do you